You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Dori Francis, Every Voice Matters. We have today Andrew Powell with Elements and Elements Traverse, which are outdoor therapeutic wilderness programs. Elements is for all boys. Elements Traverse is an adult program, so it's co-ed. But before we start talking about that part of Andrew's life, we're going to actually kind of venture back to how Andrew started out and came to be in wilderness, why he's so passionate about it, why giving back for him is so important, some of the adventures along the way, people he met, experiences he had, good, bad, ugly, otherwise. Andrew, thanks for being here. Really good to see you.
Dori, thank you. It's a real pleasure and an honor to be on the show.
So you got you started back in 1997, I understand.
Yeah, right.
Guiding expeditions.
Yeah, I went to a little granola liberal arts school in Massachusetts on the North Shore.
Okay.
I'm from Pennsylvania originally, but I have a lot of family connections in the Boston area. And I went to school up there, and we had an outfit that really, it was like, you know, you kind of have to have an Nalgene to get into school. It was one of those things. And everybody goes out and has their 2-week expedition in the Adirondacks, or they do several weekends up in the Green and White Mountains. And so I kind of really fell into guiding adventure and backpacking through that gig, working with youth that way. And that was really fun.
That was your start. And that was when?
That was 97, 98, 99. Okay. I graduated in 2000 and I studied international affairs and Spanish. I was a dual major because international development work was my career. And working with kids was always just what I did for fun. And I thought it was what I did to recharge my batteries. So I actually took a position as an adventure challenge facilitator at Seeds of Peace Camp in Maine, which is an international camp for kids from areas of conflict. The most prominent one is the Middle East. We had Israeli and Palestinian kids, and then of course the surrounding Arab countries to Israel. And that was an amazing experience. That was in 2000. And that was my first foray into working with clients, kind of in more of an intensive setting, using the adventure more in a therapeutic aspect, right? As actually conflict resolution, we worked hand in hand with the conflict resolution facilitators to help them kind of make some breakthroughs. And that was incredible space. And then when I went to El Salvador, I kept going back to my career, which was international development.
So what is international development? What is it that you had been focusing on at that time?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think international development to me was trying to help other places that have less economic opportunity access more opportunities, right? I mean, just blankly, I think what I end up falling into, first I did the Peace Corps. Well, actually, first I worked in Boston with a microfinance organization. And it's really where I learned that, hey, capitalism is a very flawed system, but it is the economic system that runs the globe. And so using capitalism to help folks basically access the market was a big piece of what I did. And working again in Boston, we were in Somerville right outside of Cambridge, and we worked in the Latin American market, in the African markets, and in India, in South Asia. So we helped folks who get it to get some of the opportunities that we all see around us. Some folks start with all kinds of access to capital, and some folks do not.
Start with nothing, right?
Exactly. And so to try to get them a chance to get access to a way to enter the marketplace. And we did that. I did that for quite a while in Boston. And then I was looking for field experience. And the best opportunity I could find was the Peace Corps. And so I joined the Peace Corps, and I knew it was a big commitment, but the reality was it was a choose your own adventure. You make it what you can make it in terms of you're out there figuring it out. What was that?
Where did you go when you were in the Peace
Corps? I was sent to El Salvador.
Oh, wow.
Stationed in El Salvador. And it was an amazing, amazing place. It's a country with just a tremendous amount of heart and a lot of concerns as far as people's well-being and safety and gangs, but a lot of it traces back to the economics of the time,
right?
And the fact that they got embroiled in civil war for years and years as a proxy war for the Cold War. You know, there's a lot of things that they had, but those people had incredible and have incredible hearts. And I felt so welcome there. And we had an awesome experience. And I was doing development work and thinking this is definitely my career path and helping folks start their own organizations and entities. And even after that, I went and was country director of a company now called Vision Spring, which helps women start their own businesses. And so it was all kind of in that business model idea of using the business model to help folks access change. And that is, as I look back now, that's the one common thread, right?
I was going to say,
even then,
still doing that.
Yeah. Even then I worked with kids. I was a coach to a softball team. We had a hiking club, a naturalist club. We had national leadership camps. I got together with other volunteers and we pull people together to help the youth, you know, kind of access, some agency in their life, right? And recognize their agency and see what they could do with themselves. And so there was definitely a common thread, but yet again, I always put the work with youth in the category of it's what I do for fun. It's what I do to recharge my batteries. That's not a career.
You were making the connection.
I was not. And I got a fellowship in El Salvador to come back to Denver, University of Denver, so not far from your stomping grounds, and work in international administration. So it's kind of an international MBA with a development focus, and continuing to do that. But in the process, I met a girl. I met a girl from Wisconsin and El Salvador, and as we were driving back through Mexico, she found this really odd sounding job called wilderness therapy. And she said, "This is my dream job. This sounds amazing." That was her dream job.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, Dory, folks can probably track where we're going here. I tried to talk her out of it. Yeah, I had worked with
crazy,
adjudicated kids. That was amazing. I worked with adjudicated kids out of Philly, doing adventure programming, adventure challenge facilitation. And I worked in the alternative school system. And kids who had a lot of legal and academic problems.
Yes, really hardship cases.
Real hardship cases and heartbreaking stuff.
Yeah.
And the model I was exposed to was fairly toxic.
Yeah.
But I, in my naivete, thought, okay, all the programs where the client's elected to be there, even if it's as intense as Arab and Israelis sleeping side by side and crying at night because they're so scared the other side is going to kill them. Like, it can be really intense, but they chose to be there, and therefore that's where the work can happen. And I tried to talk her out of it because I thought, if they don't choose to be there, you're not gonna be able to get anything done. I said, it'll drain your soul.
You were able to kind of evaluate that these were the types of programs where kids were being taken to, or parents elected them to be there, but it really wasn't their choice.
Right, and I assigned choice as the kind of defining factor of what worked and didn't work. And I had no exposure to truly therapeutic work. And as much as a lover of the outdoors and the healing power of the outdoors I am, I still conflated these two concepts together and thought, okay, sure, you're out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, and honestly, ironically, when I was working with adjudicated kids, I had them for an hour and 20 minutes. I had two classes.
Right, very short term.
Masked together. And I even said to myself, which is so funny, because I said, if only I could get these guys out in the woods for a couple of weeks. Only I could just get them out in the middle of nowhere and we could just focus on their well-being and the fact that they do have choices to make inside these very difficult dynamics that they're living. And I said that to myself, and yet I still try to talk Sarah out of taking the job. But she was smart enough and I would say
insightful.
Insightful enough. Good call.
Yeah.
To say, no, I want to check this out. And she went out and did the training in Utah, which is another thing. Like Utah. What's
You're
Utah?
Like, Utah? Why? Who wants to go to Utah?
Yeah, we were gonna live in Colorado. That was the whole idea. I was gonna be working back and forth from all these cool countries. It's like going to Utah, that's wild. She went to Utah and she did the training.
And what and year was she, that she was well, what year was that that she
this was 2005.
Okay.
So she did the training and then she turned around. She came out of the training and she said, I don't care whether or not you ever take the job. You need to come out here and you need to do the training. You need to check this out. She said, get your keister out here. What she said, but honestly, you got to check this out and you have to see how incredible this is. And it was funny because I thought, okay, well, I don't want to be disingenuous, but I do have 8 months until my grad program starts.
Okay, so you had some time. Yeah.
So I thought, okay, well, whatever. I could do it. I could do this for 6 months. This could be neat. And again, it would be, even if I did take the job, it would be yet another punctuation of this is my sidebar.
Right.
Working with youth is a sidebar. It's my recharge my batteries. And she was so pumped about it that I knew that it was going to be something special. And I came out and did the training and thought, this is really cool. And it's definitely not, I learned right away, it's not whether they choose to be there. Because I see these kids in these groups and they are affecting change in real time on their own volition and accessing their own agency.
Yep, they still have a choice once they're there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what are their, I mean, and honestly, you can go meta on this and talk about what kind of choices really do they have at home anyway. They're getting themselves, they're moving towards more and more and more restriction in their lives.
Right.
And this is a step back, step away from that, get some objectivity and start to really focus on what choices you do have. And how is what you're doing really getting you more of what you want, or is it actually getting you less of what you want? And that was a huge kind of aha moment for me that kind of grabbed my attention.
What
because
was the training?
I was so I just was so impressed with these kids. And this was a fully adolescent program. So that I can say kids, but they were awesome and they were doing great things. And I recognized, wow, this is really special.
You saw the difference from.
I saw the difference right out of the gate. And so I deferred my grad program for a year. Fast forward, then I just didn't go. And I was thinking as I was going along, well, this isn't a career. I still thought, what's my career?
So what was the training like back in 2005, especially compared to, you know, training that happens today?
Yeah, I mean, it was very much
pretty raw back then.
It was very much more an open experience. And honestly, there were 18 people in my training and all of them but two got the job offer. And then a lot of the concept at the time was, they'll vet themselves as they go. Like they'll either get the job, they'll either do well or not, which is definitely a different concept than we have now in terms of we are very much more focused and intentional on who we hire and why we're hiring them and what their development track will be. And not as much of a let's let them figure it out alongside of our clients kind of idea. I think it was more, you know, obviously there's two tracks of wilderness. There's the one that came out of just the experiential model of the experience is the process.
Right.
And they have everything at their disposal that they need. And we're just here to process it with them. And then there's the other side, which is the therapy driven model, which is, hey, you know, this is just the backdrop and really therapy is the goal. And I find, you know, I feel like we're coming to a better balance of trying to understand that, yes, both of these things are equally important. And a lot of our clients are dealing with major organic issues and psychiatric and psychological issues that they need a lot more help than just than insight alone can provide them.
Right. And the therapy usually that these kids have been getting at home is you drop into the therapist's office for 45 minutes. And yeah, and they sit there. Yes. And they shake their head. Yep. And, oh, yes, I get it. And I'm going to do that. And mom and dad are right. And you're right.
And they're watching the clock because they know
they're watching the clock. And then they walk out the door and they go back to doing whatever it was they were doing. And that just can go on for years.
Right. Right. And that was what was so impressive to me as we went is, yes, these guys can gather a ton of insight. But what happened was I kept staying. I kept staying in wilderness. It had its hooks in me. And I have a partner here, Dr. Neil Christensen, who wrote his dissertation in wilderness. And he and I worked at our old program together as well.
Oh,
I was the field director. He was the clinical director. And then I moved into program director and executive director while still working with him. And we've been thick as thieves ever since. But what we kept doing was trying to retrofit some actual clinical takeaways to a program that I believe was very insight dependent. It just required, and I think again, the olden days of wilderness was hey, see what you can learn out here. And you've got it all at your disposal and we can curate it a little bit, but the reality is we're letting you figure it out. And I think that's really helpful. But Neil really kind of knocked that idea out of my head when he said, look, we're only reaching, you know, the fullest potential. We're only reaching 25% of our clients. The ones who can immediately start tying the string between cause and effect and how they got themselves here and what they can do and how they can change that. There's a level of insight that some of our clients have that they can access that. The rest of them, they're still in a very, very tricky process of pre-contemplation.
Yeah. And look at the stages of change. Shorter period of time back then as well.
It was a little bit shorter. I think we pride ourselves that we're not going into the huge length of stay that other programs have seen, because we do still believe it is a short-term intervention.
It is a short-term, absolutely.
And we don't believe that it's there for the maintenance. If you look at stages of change, 90% of our clients come in at pre-contemplation. It goes pre-contemplation, contemplation, preparation, action, maintenance, and then the cycle repeats itself, right? So 90% of our clients come in pre-contemplation, but even those who come in at contemplation and even those who choose to come to wilderness, who say, I'm ready to take action, they still, that's about as much traction as we can do. And what we always did was we tried to retrofit some actionable, here's what we can do together kind of skill development that we could put in there. And when I came into the partnership at Elements, I'm fast forwarding a little bit, I guess back to the original, I never left. I got an MBA at the University of Utah. In my mind, I was told to go be a therapist because therapy is the way to go do wilderness therapy. But I thought, you know what? I'm going to get a business degree because we need to run these places as effectively and as professionally as you run a hospital. We want to run them, and not all hospitals are run amazing. So I actually probably shouldn't put myself up there.
It's okay.
We need to run these as in the same level with the same expectations that people would have of the medical model.
Right.
Just because it's therapy doesn't mean it needs to be loosey-goosey. And we need to have this be a consistent intervention that can be measurable, whose outcomes can be
business interest in everything you were doing.
Totally. And it's like, yes,
part of you.
And let's use the business model to affect positive change and growth for people and for the benefit of society, right? If it is a flawed system, it definitely is a flawed system. There's huge holes in capitalism. And I don't know how we're going to do anything to topple this idea. I think we use it and we do everything we can to make it a better place for humanity, right? And make this world a better place. And so really, from my perspective, it needed to be run more professionally. It needed to be more consistent. And we needed to really start diving into making it measurable and a driven to achieve the same kind of levels of outcomes for every client, no matter what their presentation, no matter how they come in. And so I went to business school at the University of Utah, and that was awesome. I think it was a really helpful thing to kind of gain some more training in how to run an effective business. Business school lacks in a lot of the service model. You know, they don't do well. They do great with manufacturing.
Right. They're not a mental health or service organization type.
Yeah.
Schooling.
Those are the areas, those are the deficiencies that I've had to continue to learn. But I have had a ton of experience on the ground doing that. So that was helpful for me. And then honestly, you know, I don't know how much detail we want to go into, but I eventually had a corporate owner. I was one of 144 executive directors in that organization.
Oh my gosh.
And it was not the personal level of care. We could do it on the ground, and I love that program, right. And I love all the people there. And on the ground level, we were able to still provide good care until, you know, until the moves to squeeze it tight and sell it off started coming into play, which we've seen in every industry. You know, so it happens, unfortunately, in lots of different areas of the economy. But this was one of those things where I don't believe it's a good fit for the therapeutic community. Mm. It's not a good fit for a treatment model. I think what I wanted more than anything was a program where we know everybody and we all know who we're working with, and
people are relationship based.
Totally, it's relationship based.
Yeah,
exactly. And people are people, not numbers, and not, right. You know, not just a spreadsheet, right? I mean, right. The reality is you can make spreadsheets, and I still use them. They're good tools, and people don't belong on spreadsheets. These are human beings.
We'll use them too.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very relationship-driven approach, like you said. And so,
well, I mean, these kids are coming in to want to create relationships. A lot of them don't have relationships even within their own family structure, right. Let alone mm-hmm. with their own peer group.
Well, and we're studying our outcomes in like news. This is like a little teaser, but some of the research that Neil has pulled together has shown that clients, you know, parents put therapy at the top, individual therapy at the top.
Yeah, absolutely. Because they think that's the fix all.
Yes. And they put it at the top of all the things that they say are the most important things to the success at our program. But clients put their peers.
Yes.
And then group therapy and then therapy. Yes. And the reality is it is a that peer culture. And the fact that our mentors are kind of amazing and not putting themselves above them, but being a mentor, not being a friend or a pal or a buddy. They don't need their approval, but they're an incredible influence. And that's what I saw all the time with our mentors and our instructors in the field, is they have so much influence in just being people who are working on their lives as well, right? Not using the program to benefit themselves per se directly, but people who also are not sitting there saying, I've got all the answers and you don't. I'm sitting on this hill and you got to come to us for
that's right. Answers,
right. Yeah. And so that is just, it's such a powerful thing. So when everything was kind of, I mean, I told the CEO of this organization, 3,500 employees and owned by a venture capital organization that just wanted to sell it. I said, you could do this for 1 year. You can squeeze this turnip for 1 year, but you better sell us at the end of the year because we can't keep doing this. And that year went around and we had a good year, but it wasn't quite good enough for the goals. And we fell 2% shy of our goal. And yet I had no bonuses to give anybody. I had to cut our salaries. It was a brutal, brutal time. And Neil and I talked to each other.
What year was this all happening?
This is 2013.
Okay.
So I had taken from 2005 into 2013. I'd become the executive director. And was doing everything I could to kind of shield the program and keep it as intact as it was, because it's a wonderful program. And, you know, yet there was just this external pressure all the time. And at the end of the day, it was just pretty obvious that I couldn't do my job anymore. I couldn't tell people like you, this isn't affecting us. It's not affecting treatment. And when I couldn't do that, who am I? What am I? Somebody else needs to come in here who can do that, because I can't do that in good faith and honestly, right? And so therefore, here I am. I'm in a position where it's like, this is really affecting who we are. And at the same time, I got into talks with an organization. Actually, I started thinking about developing my own program.
Okay.
And I got into talks with the folks at Elements about starting it with me. This was the dream. We'll get back to Colorado. We're going to start this program. And they said, well, we need an executive director here. We need somebody to help us move in out of startup mode and get rolling and really kind of get to that level of professionalism and consistency and not have it be so many ups and downs. And so it was really hard for me to stay. I felt like I was betraying my old program and I'm leaving them and I'm going to the next one, but okay, we're starting this new gig. And I got in and I immediately just fell in love with the model, because my partner, Lynn, he also saw that dependence on insight. And he said, look, we need to be helping them develop actual skills. So he brought DBT to wilderness therapy.
Okay.
And dialectical behavioral therapy.
Right. Yeah. What was it drew you in? Yeah.
That was one of the big pieces. Dialectical behavioral therapy was huge. The other thing is we actually have an evidence-based modality that helps our clients really come to grips with their relationship with their maladaptive coping mechanisms, whether it's screens or substances or blame, shame, avoidance. We actually have a structured way using motivational interviewing called the 7 challenges. And that is a structured way to kind of structure our conversations with them that our clients can be honest about what they're getting from it, so that they can come to their own conclusions about whether or not that's actually helping them. And it's an amazing model because it helps our clients get real when they're not ready. If you're really pre-contemplative, let's just use substances because it's an easy example that everybody gets, right? If you're pre-contemplative about the fact that you're having a problem with substances, you're not ready to walk into a program that says you need to be powerless to admit your...
Right.
You need to be ready to admit you're powerless, right? And so for us, it's really just an amazing opportunity to have dialogue. And it was a little shocking at first because our clients are really, really honest, really honest. They're not telling you what they think you want to hear.
No, when you strip away all the distractions and the chatter and the pressure, there's nothing left for them but to just tell you like it is.
Yeah.
And
right.
There's no fear of them doing that.
Right. And even when we aren't prescribing the answer to them, if the answer isn't be honest, no matter what the consequence, no matter what you think we're going to think of you, be honest. That's the only answer I'll prescribe to them. You know what I mean? Even if they don't think we're prescribing the answer, they're still trying to figure out what we want to hear.
That's right.
Many of them, as Oprah says, that have the disease to please, which we all have to some degree or another, right? You know, like we want to give people the answer, or if we want to just manipulate our way out of the situation because it's scary, right? We have to have compassion for our clients because it's scary having to face themselves.
Yeah, and I, you know, that disease to please, I mean, I'm seeing that not just from the kids and the young adults. I'm also starting to see it in a business culture of how people run their businesses.
Totally.
And I think, you know, I don't know if that's tied into capitalism or not. That could be a whole nother conversation, but it's becoming toxic.
Well, I agree. And I think, honestly, there's a lot. Ray Dalio writes about radical transparency in terms of just trying to get to a place where everyone can just be honest with each other.
Yes, just be honest.
Yeah. And I read it. I actually, if you talk about the challenge, they did a study on the Challenger disaster in the Harvard Business Review for NASA. And they really looked into that culture and how toxic that culture was in suppressing mistakes, suppressing differences of opinion. Sorry, my phone's going off. Suppressing people being able to have that psychological safety of being able to say, I'm wrong. I made a mistake. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not sure what's up. And it's like, that's the bedrock of a good treatment program is being able to say, this is what's up. These are my concerns. This is what's wrong. These are my observations. This is where I messed up. And this is where I've made mistakes. And so having a culture that embraces mistakes is critical because it's that's critical. How we learn. Right. So it is, it's a big lesson for the corporate world as well, because I think there have been a lot of opportunities for folks to create a safer space. But I can tell you, if I could write two business reviews about my old corporate owners, the one would be how to evaluate the health of a company based on the health and or the well-being of a company based on the well-being of its board, of its leadership, because it was a very unhealthy culture. It was a very unhealthy space in terms of the expectations they had of people.
Yeah. And it trickles down into everybody when that happens. Yeah. There's no way to avoid it.
Totally.
Yeah.
And the other one would be the folly of making unilateral decisions across multiple lines of business, because there were plenty of times where we had to cut into our operations to make up for shortfalls in the methadone department or something like that, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff like that. But the reality is, for all these things that were difficult, I really respect and admired what they were doing at Elements. And when they brought me in to be their executive director with the idea of starting a program, it became very quickly a story of what we can do together rather than what I can do for you and then what you guys can do for me. Very quickly, because it's an incredible team.
Yeah, I think I have felt that from the beginning, way back when Elements first started, that you know, especially John Caron, he just always was so incredibly, genuinely passionate about what he was doing, mm-hmm. wanting to share, mm-hmm. being mm-hmm. really honest yeah. about what he offered, no pretense,
yeah,
no ego.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, yeah, I can remember several conversations with him from years past.
Absolutely. I mean, and I have a story at the beginning. One of these mind-blowing moments was in my old world as executive director, if it was a tough enough or difficult enough situation, well, then it just got kicked to me. And whether that was from corporate or whether that was from below at my program, and it was just, okay, I got to deal with it alone. And I remember Lynn calling me with a very difficult situation. He's our partner. He was our clinical director at the time before Neil took the reins. And now Tara Steyerman has those reins. But we're an owner-operated gig and we're small. And Lynn called me up and he's like, hey, this is what's happening. We've got this and this and this and this issue. And we sat and we talked about it. And the whole time I'm kind of getting my mind going like, okay, I got to get ready to deal with this. And I'm kind of like mentally rolling my sleeves up.
Because you felt like this is just going to be me having to
take. I got
to
deal with it all. I got to deal with the consultant, the HR problems, the parent, you know, concerns, the issue with a client, like the whole nine yards. Things happen, right? This is just a program, right? Like you're all living together. So I'm thinking I'm going to have to deal with all this stuff. And at the end of the conversation, Lynn goes, all right, well, I'll let you know how it goes. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, okay, all right, well, I'm here to support whatever you need.
It was just
I have people around me that just immediately took so much ownership over everybody's well-being in the program was so liberating. And it's so funny because my wife will say this too, like
Sarah did become your wife.
What? Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. So we eventually, I mean, and honestly, I think wilderness therapy was integral and our time at our program together, because she walked the trail for a couple of years before becoming a recruiter. And I moved into the administration, but it was instrumental in us kind of really coming together and understanding each other in a new context rather than just kind of being kids out on adventures together.
Right. No,
and
it's intense.
It was super intense. And when she had our second kid, we have three, Maya, Sebastian, and Xavier. When she had Sebastian, she hung up her recruiter hat. But anyway, she's watched me and been my support through this whole process. And we marvel at the fact that I have the same title here. I mean, technically I'm CEO because there's two programs, but really I'm executive director. It's the same kind of thing at this level of, we're a small program. And so, it's just, well, I have the same title, but my life, my quality of life is just so drastically different than it was when we were under that corporate ownership. So it's a different animal, but it's an amazing team. And it's that owner operated space that we have, that where we just want everybody to be as invested as we are. And that's where, you know, when we started our young adult program, which is all genders, and it operates in the same beautiful two field areas we have from the summertime.
Yeah, so why don't you share where you're located?
Yeah, we're up in the mountains in the summertime at 7,000 to 10,000 feet. It's, you know, typically 70s, 80s. It's not crazy hot. It feels a lot more like Colorado to me.
Yeah.
Than or kind of like the high
higher elevation. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you're down in the Red Rock country in the wintertime of the swell, the San Rafael swell. And it's just gorgeous. So it's much more temperate. And so we do have the best of both worlds when we have these two fields that are very close to each other. So it made perfect sense for Traverse to operate there. But what we knew right out of the gate was, we want to have owners at Traverse. We don't want to keep growing vertically. We want to grow laterally, where everybody is close to the ground and everybody has a clear understanding of everyone who's in the program, all of our clients, what their needs are, what's going on, instead of us just continuing to kind of build this tower where we get further and further away from the actual work provided. And so we brought in Janine Donald, who's our executive director at Traverse, and Eric Fawson, who's our clinical director.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know Eric well.
Eric, yes.
Yeah. And so it's been amazing. It's just an amazing group of people, and we're doing everything we can to provide the absolute best service possible and to the families and the clients, while making sure that we still keep our eye on the prize, which is that each individual has their own story. Every one of their voices matters. And it's just amazing to see that, you know, at our adolescent program, we just pulled some research. Here's another teaser, a little facts.
Okay,
for you.
Go ahead.
97% of our, we ask every single one of our clients to fill out a survey on the youth outcomes questionnaire when they leave, and just a survey on how we did. And 97.5% of them said they are satisfied or very satisfied with the service with the treatment they received while they were here with us. And that to me is, it's did they feel seen? Did they feel like we were there for them? Do they feel like we were providing service for them? Because our parents, it's very easy to see how happy they are with us.
Well, they're just so relieved when they start seeing changes happen.
Yeah.
They spent so much time at home not seeing any changes happen.
Yeah. So and being afraid and spending so much time in fear.
Fear. Yeah. They're actually starting to fail for the first time. Yeah.
I was dragging my feet to have kids. And Sarah knows it, because I was like, I'm not afraid to have a baby. I'm afraid that I'm going to have to do what we're asking all these parents to do.
Well,
because we have to respond to our children's needs.
Yeah.
And if our children demonstrate that they need more than they can get at home, then damn well right, as a parent, I better step up and provide that. And if that means wilderness, if that means any kind of residential treatment, I need to love my kid enough to get my ego out of the way, like our parents do. And I take tremendous amount of, I mean, I'm humbled all the time. And I take a tremendous amount of inspiration from the parents who come to our program. As fallible as we all are as parents, they put their fears aside and their ego aside, and they say, I need to love my kid. And loving my kid means doing the unthinkable, which means finding help outside of the home.
Yeah.
And that to me is, it blows my mind every day. And I know I may need to do that because my kids may need it. There's no magic formula that's going to make
My own daughter went into residential treatment when she was 15. You know, I was living in California at the time and hired a consultant.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. And, you know, it was recommended she go to this program in Utah. And at that time, it was 2001. I was like, Utah?
Same. Totally.
What?
Well, I have so much respect for you loving your daughter enough
Yeah, it was the hardest decision I ever made.
Yeah.
And I understand when parents are standing in those shoes, it's not easy.
Right.
And you just have to love them more than you fear what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And the idea, I mean, our ideal
with your child.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and that's it. Being inside the treatment world, I know people's intentions and I know the field has come such a long way.
It has changed so much.
And sadly, there's still programs out there that are about trying to break kids down.
Yes.
I think a lot of the kind of more boot camp style program or the military style programs that are about breaking their spirit and making them conform to their mold.
It's sad. Yeah.
It's sad.
It just breaks my heart. Yeah.
For all the programs that we interact with, because we don't interact with those programs.
No, me neither. Yep.
For all the ones we interact with, I'm so impressed that, you know, that these people are dedicating their lives to just helping clients. I mean, really, it's about creating a space. From my perspective as a parent, my job is to create a container for them to grow, a container for them to recognize what the world is going to expect of them and be able to rise to the occasion. And if I can't provide that, then we have to find it, right? And so I think a lot of kids, I say this all the time because, you know, I'm in wilderness, but I hear parents all the time. Every kid needs wilderness and could use wilderness, could benefit from wilderness. And coming out here and having this unbroken ceremony of coming to understanding of who they are and what they're capable of.
Well, just disconnecting because, you know, now with technology, I mean, even, you know, more than before, you know, kids are so interconnected with way too much information at a very, very young age. And
to learn to love themselves when there's no one around but themselves.
Yes.
To learn to sit with themselves in those quiet moments.
In that quiet moment. Let's make sure that, you know, parents have a little bit of information about Elements, Elements Traverse. So Elements is your adolescent all boys program.
Yes.
And what ages do you accept?
13 to 17.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how are the groups formed and matched with the therapists that are there? Because that's one of the questions that a lot of parents ask.
Yeah.
How do I know they're in the right group and with the right
therapist? Well, when we get a call from a family or a consultant, we try to get the baseline of what's going on for that client. And we have an amazing team of therapists that have been with us for years. I mean, our least tenured therapist has been here for a couple of years and probably 2.5 at this point. And it's gone then from there 5, 10, 9. I mean, we have an incredible team of folks who get who we are and who take their own kind of specialty. And then two of them are owners. And we have this amazing ability to provide a different, I mean, with wilderness, when the groups are unto themselves and they each have their own therapist, we believe in several things. Capping the group size, so it's an intimate experience for every one of our clients. And each group has its own therapist. So our therapists don't have clients in every single group. They don't take boys over here, girls over here, young adults over there, right? And they have their own little subspecialties. And you can treat very different presentations. So some of our clients are very neurodiverse, whether that's learning differences or autism spectrum disorder or other things that they're dealing with organically that they've been living with and learning to live with, right? And then we have some clients who are fully invested in substance abuse, right? And not that I'm going to say they're addicts, because I think some of them may be, but the reality is it's not for us to say at the outset, but we look at their presentation and what they're dealing with, and we find the best therapist and group for them. And the edges of every group are a little bit blurry on purpose. We don't want a fully homogeneous group in every aspect, because the diversity in each group can help everybody learn, right? And you're always going to get somebody who looks like they're just being belligerent and self-absorbed. And the reality is that
That's how they're protecting themselves.
That's a wall.
Yeah.
It could be a behavioral. It could be a learned thing. It could be that they're neuroatypical. And it could be that this is the way that manifests for them, is that they are just very rigid and they want it their way. And that's how it goes. And so the reality is, for all of these things, we try to find the best therapist and the best milieu, the best group makeup for each of them. And so we keep a running understanding of how every group is forming and what their culture looks like to find the best fit for them. And that's the same at Traverse.
And so Elements Traverse is your adult program.
Elements Traverse is our adult program. It's all genders. And it is honestly 18 to 28 probably would be the high average.
Okay.
We've worked with 33-year-olds. I mean, the reality is what we're probably not suited for is clients who've had everything going for themselves and then it's all fallen apart. Our clients are more people who are trying to figure out what they want to do with their life
and how
to really establish themselves and how to believe in themselves and how to maybe put aside some of their anxieties and not put them in a box, but really process them and manage them. And as you know, DBT is huge for both of them. And I think what is the common thread, 13 to 33, the common thread is our clients are not coping well with what's going on in their life. And DBT is incredible for skills development because DBT is based on the dialectic, the two seeming opposite things that work in perfect conjunction, that we can either change things or we can accept things. And so you're developing skills in acceptance, which are distress tolerance and emotional regulation. And then you're working with change skills, which are interpersonal effectiveness. And emotional regulation. Mindfulness and distress tolerance are the acceptance skills. But so they're really developing actual skills that they can use in real time. And we're there 24/7, 365 with them. And so we get to say, hey, remember that skill? Remember that mindfulness skill that you used that you felt was really helpful? Now's a good time to use it.
Yeah, now you can use it again.
Let's do it right now. Or that interpersonal effectiveness skill that you said you probably could use, let's do it. And so helping them put the DBT into action is critical because the whole enchilada is trying to help our clients see how what they've been doing is not getting them more of what they want and helping them kind of come to grips with their relationship with their maladaptive coping mechanism and then developing adaptive coping skills while they're doing that. And that to us is
your heart is definitely in this. I'm glad you made the connection in your life.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can see that you're still very much about giving back and making sure that that's a part of everything that you do.
Yeah. Well, I talked your ear off. I get so excited about
this. I mean, it's,
I feel like this is
passionate about what you do.
Yeah, I do.
Is so wonderful. Because it's sad when you see people just kind of going through the grind every day, but to have that passion and to continue to build and grow, which is what you're doing. So what's the best way for people to reach out and learn more about Elements and Elements Traverse?
Well, I mean, our number is right on our website, elementswilderness.com and elementstraverse.com.
Okay.
And it's, you know, that number will go right to one of our cell phones. You mentioned John Caron, one of our founders and my partner. He works in admissions. Kate Leard is our admissions director.
Kate is awesome. Yeah.
Vanessa does admissions and helps with parent support. And then me. And so it'll come to one of our phones right out of the gate. And so you can talk to us at any time. And then of course, checking out our websites to see what we're about is always a good option. But we're happy to speak to anybody about anything that they're working with. And whether that's clients calling us up to see if they want to try this out, or parents who are concerned, who want to just talk about the process, we're open to all of it.
Thank you so much, Andrew, for being here today. I've enjoyed really hearing more details about your story. I can't wait to see you and keep digging to hear more.
It's a pleasure. I swear. Thank you for letting me talk your ear off. I get so excited. And
great information. Yeah. Just really appreciate your time. And I just want to remind people that next week I won't be here. Jamie Malone will be here. She's going to be hosting our show next week. And our guest is Aaron Huey, who is the founder of Fire Mountain Residential Treatment Center here in Colorado. They're going to talk about how the teen suicide rate has increased and self-harm and just mental health around teens, which, you know, continuing subject of what our kids are going through today. I always like to sign off with a little saying, and I have to say, I have a friend on Facebook. every day he posts the same saying. And I want to thank him for doing that because it really just does spark my day. And it's today is the best day of your life. Today is really all we have. So it really truly is the best day of your life. Thank you for being here, everyone. Every voice matters. We'll see you all every Thursday at 12 noon. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Thanks, Dory.
You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dory Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.